And now, Lifestyles Unlimited presents the Real Estate Investor Radio Show. Over the next hour, we unfold your map to financial freedom. You'll learn how to retire through investing in single-family and multifamily real estate. You'll learn how to create cash flow and build wealth so you can have the time and money to live the lifestyle you want.
Welcome to the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show. I'm Mike Harrison, and yes, we are always working on your financial freedom. Thank you for joining me today. It's another great day to be a real estate investor. Times are looking good. The deals I'm seeing coming across are solid, great returns, excellent time to be investing, and I'm speaking specifically of multifamily properties. So I've engaged in a few already year to date. And looking forward to getting in a few more before the end of the year. So, we've been in a bit of, let's just call it some stormy waters last couple of years, but we've navigated through those. And I really feel we're coming into just another great time to invest. One of those periods where it just goes and goes and goes for a few years. So looking forward to it. Now, why do we invest in real estate? We can put our money in a lot of different places, right? What is it about this real estate thing? Why? Well, first and foremost, real estate is the most resilient asset class in the world through thick and thin. You can make all the mistakes in the world, and I don't advise this, but you can make all the mistakes in the world. If you just hold that property long enough, eventually you're going to make money. So imagine doing it right and not having to worry about mistakes and doing it properly. You're going to do well in real estate. I have made mistakes in real estate and still made money. Things where you look back and go, I should have done this. It would have just improved my return. So it is the most resilient asset class in the world. Secondly, it's a product that we offer. We're business people, and clean, functional housing is our product. There's not enough of that. There's not enough clean, functional housing for those that need it here in the United States. At last check, imagine this, we're about 4 million units shy. I don't know where that number comes from, but let's say they're 50% wrong. Even if there was demand for 2 million units, that's still pretty darn good if you've got a product that's in high demand. So everyone needs a place to live. You got three choices: buy, rent, be homeless, or live with your parents, really. So it's a high demand product, and we provide that product. Third reason for me, and this is most important, is we have total control over our investments. I am the owner of that property. It has an address. It's tangible. I can touch it. I'm not at the mercy of Wall Street. I'm not worried about Washington, D.C. I'm worried about my local market and keeping my property rented and providing that best property, best price to a great resident. That's what I'm worried about, right? Day in and day out. We don't get caught up in the news cycle. I mean, it's tragedy after tragedy, and then 2 days later, you forget the original tragedy, and you just get sucked in. No, I'm in control of my investments, and that's what I'm worried about, and that's what I'm taking care of. Smaller investors, yeah, that brings me to my next point, is smaller investors are much more agile than the large institutional investors. Imagine an investment where the small guy has greater advantages than the large guy. I mean, we can react quicker. We can adjust to market changes pretty much overnight. So we can adapt and overcome. And these large institutional investors are massive. They're buying 1,000-unit apartment complexes. That's not what we do. Those things are miniature cities. I mean, they're the Titanic trying to steer that thing, and we're sitting out there on a speedboat maneuvering left, right, back, change the direction to go overcome this wave. That's what we're doing, and these guys are driving super tankers, right? They can't change them very quick. So smaller investors are more agile than large institutional investors. Regardless of a good economy or bad economy, we're making money. Our returns are much greater. Often single-family properties, I'm seeing triple-digit returns. Yes, triple-digit as in 100%+. You know, you're baking in the equity capture, you're baking in the cash flow, and in that year one, it's often greater than 100%. Now, annualized, multifamily properties, I'm seeing greater than 20% annualized over the time of that investment. Now, passive investing is a little slower than single family properties, but I've done the single family properties. I've moved into the passive investing, but I've got excellent annualized returns. I've had 65% annualized returns. I know some folks that have had 100% annualized returns in multifamily properties. So our returns are much greater. And then there's a diversification of returns for the real estate investor. Now, what do I mean by that? We're making money different ways, okay? When we're making a monthly cash flow, when our resident pays the rent, we're going to pay the associated expenses. The leftover is cash in our pocket, right? That's monthly cash flow. There's an equity capture. As I mentioned, we're buying a distressed property. We're bringing that property up to speed. It's now worth more than we paid for it. That is a growth to your net worth. It's unrealized. I mean, it's in the form of sheetrock and bricks and copper pipes and flooring and all that good stuff, lumber, but it's still your value grows. I mean, when you do a personal financial statement, your bank looks at that and they go, oh yeah, you have that much equity in the property. That goes to your personal net worth. Mortgage pay down each and every month. When our resident pays the rent, we take that rent money and we apply a portion of it to pay the mortgage down. There's a little bump we get as that principal reduces. So again, on the diversification of returns, there's natural appreciation. That property, real estate tends to double in value every 10 years. So there is a natural appreciation to real estate. Now, we're not just making our money one way. We have other ways that those dollars that we invested are earning on our behalf. And one of those advantages is the tax advantages. And honestly, when I first started investing in real estate, people had talked about it. They say, oh, there's a lot of tax advantages. And like, okay, tax advantages. Just what does that mean, right? It's such a generic statement, tax advantages. And there's a lot to it, okay? And I'm no tax guy, but I'm going to give you the 40,000 foot flyover. But it's an area also where I do the radio show and I have a lot of questions from listeners that will send me specifically on the tax, and I do the best I can, but really the answer is consult a tax professional, because our tax code is not a simple tax code. What do they say? If they stack the paper up, it's like 6 feet tall if they were to print out the tax laws in this country, the IRS laws, whatever. It's ridiculous. But I do get a lot of questions, and it's not my strongest point. I'm no tax professional. But I understand enough that I can kind of outline these advantages. Always consult a professional so that you can implement these advantages. There's different ones in how you maximize the benefits going forward. I have a great tax person, a tax team that I've been working with for many years. They are a Lifestyles Unlimited vendor, and I defer to their guidance, okay? I recommend you do the same. I don't tell them, I don't go, nope, the law is this. I tell them my expectations and how I see things, but they're the tax pros. Now, some of you out there may be saying, well, Mike, hiring a CPA and a tax pro is expensive. And you may be saying, I could do this myself. I have two thoughts here. This is high level stuff. And maybe you have that background in taxes and you are a CPA and you're really good with it. Okay. I mean, if you want to do it yourself, great. There are people that have tax backgrounds and it's no big deal for them. Fine. But my team that I use, that I defer to, is specific to real estate investors. All right. Now, many of you may be saying, what does that mean, specific to real estate investors? Tax law is tax law. No, it's not. My tax pro told me years ago, he said, a lot of the tax code as it's written is written for interpretation. It's left for interpretation. So you may have three different tax pros in a room, and tax pro number one sees the rule like this, and tax pro number two sees it like this, and tax pro number three, who caters to the real estate investor, sees it totally different or somewhat different. Now, my tax people don't push the envelope, but they interpret the tax laws in the light to provide me the strongest advantage as a real estate investor. Does that make sense? So I just want you to understand that the tax law, that was an eye opener for me. When he told me, he said, Mike, a lot of it is interpretation, and we try our best to interpret it on behalf of the real estate investor. Now, back to the point that tax professionals are expensive. At face value, yes, they are. But I want to look at the whole picture. The value I receive for professional tax advice, consulting, strategy, implementation, for future years, right? It's not just about this year. It's about next year and the year after that. The filing of a proper return. I don't see the cost as overly expensive. I have a large portfolio. There's a lot of complication to it. And what my team brings to me, for me, is worth it. Now, we do remind you, this is a business. We're investors, but this is a business. So when you pay for that tax team, right, that figurative check, maybe actually still stroke a check, but a lot of times we're just paying online. What is that? That's a business expense, right? You pay this team of tax professionals to help you with your taxes and strategically place you in the best light so that you can pay the lowest amount of taxes on your real estate portfolio. That's a business expense. It's a write-off. It's a cost of doing business. And we put that on our next tax return, just like we would write off our mortgage interest, our property taxes, and everything else associated with property ownership. Tax prep is nothing more than a business expense, and it should be treated as such. So for the rest of the show, I'm going to go through these tax advantages, and there's a lot of them. Number one, I've got 10. I doubt I'll get through all 10 advantages. Number one, depreciation deduction. Okay, this is huge. I love depreciation deduction, and it's literally deducting a portion of the cost of the rental property each year, excluding the land. And I'm going to explain it more. We may need to get into this in the next segment. But over 27 and a half years for residential properties. This is for single family homes. It's a non-cash deduction, and it reduces your taxable income without requiring actual spending. Okay, this isn't an expense like our tax guys that we spent money on. This is a deduction of the value of the property. Follow me here. I'll give you an example. And this example is going to also highlight one of the key reasons why we want leverage on the property, right? We want a mortgage on our real estate. Yes, we leverage every piece of property we own because it maximizes our return on one hand, and on the second hand, it enables our cash flow to be tax-free. And I'll explain it. So we have a rental property, and let me just pull a number out of the air. And I know math on the radio is hard, but let's say that rental property is worth $250,000 and it rents for $1,800 a month after principal, interest, taxes, and insurance, PITI, right? We're going to pay that out of the rent. Let's say our cash flow is $400 per month, right? That's the money we keep. That's our cash flow. So they pay the rent $1,800. We pay all the associated costs. That leaves us with $400 per month. That's $4,800 a year in passive income. You with me? Now, let's depreciate that rental property against the passive income. When you get your tax statement, as I mentioned, it's broken down into two sections. It has land value on one hand, and it's got improved value on the other. Remember, this is a $250,000 house. We're going to say the land is $25,000 and the property value is $225,000. Stay with me on the other side, and I'll show you the magic of the depreciation deduction.
Lifestyles Unlimited's Real Estate Investor Radio Show returns in a moment. Got questions? Go to lifestylesunlimited.com.
Learn to retire in 5 years or less through real estate investing. Learn how, learn now. Let Lifestyles Unlimited show you how. Get educated now. Text the word radio to 88007. That's radio to 88007. Join for just $297. Lifestyles Unlimited.
Pre- creating the lifestyle you've always wanted. You're hearing Lifestyles Unlimited's Real Estate Investor Radio Show.
Welcome back to the show. I'm Mike Harrison, talking about tax advantages of owning rental real estate. I can share with you, when I first started buying rental property, I knew tax advantages, right? Let's use the quotes around it. Tax advantage. I knew that was part of why we did it, but I really didn't know what I didn't know. I didn't know per se the tax advantages. I was buying it more for cash flow and more for appreciation and more for wealth growth. But as my portfolio grew, I came to understand just how tremendous the tax advantages are. The first one I'm highlighting is called the depreciation deduction that we have. The law, and it's a phantom loss, okay? But the law says, hey, you own a business and you can depreciate that value, the improved value of your business, over 27 and a half years, okay? That's the law. So we're taking our metaphorical $250,000 rental property. We're looking at our tax statement, and it's saying the improved side is worth $225,000 and the land side is worth $25,000. That's how we get to our $250,000. Now I'm going to take out my trusty calculator. Remember, I'm making $4,800 a year cash flow on this property, $400 a month, $4,800 to the positive in income. But I take my trusty calculator and I take $225,000 and I divide it by 27.5, right? Because the IRS says I can. Well, that's $8,181 per year. But my cash flow is $4,800. So I go to the IRS, right? I do my tax return and I say, hey, my business lost $8,000 this year and I only made $4,800 on my property. And the IRS looks at that and they say, well, you're a terrible business owner. You didn't make any money on that property, so I'm not going to tax you on that cash flow. Thank you and have a nice day. Is this a great country or what? I told you it's a phantom loss, all right? But we show the IRS, hey, they wrote the rules. I didn't write the rules. That property lost $8,000 and I only made $4,800, right? You got to kind of say that with a shrug on your shoulders, and the IRS is going to tell you, have a lovely day, man. You don't owe me any taxes on that. Now, I want to drive this depreciation deduction method home. I'm not going to get to all 10, and I don't know if I'll pick them. I'll probably pick them up on another show. But let's look at this in light of the Dave Ramsey method. This is important here, okay? If you missed the first segment where I talked about what we're doing on this depreciation deduction example, go back and listen to it. But let's use the Dave Ramsey method. There's a lot of Dave Ramsey types out there, and I was a Dave Ramsey guy prior to being a real estate investor. The education Dave gave me really set the table for me to become a real estate investor and take my net worth to the next level. So I'm grateful Dave was in my life when he needed to be in my life, and when he didn't need to be, I brought Dale Walmsley in my life. But what does Dave say? Oh, you want a rental property? You better pay cash for that rental property. You're not allowed to have any debt whatsoever because you don't know how to handle debt. Man, that's a little harsh, but you know that's what's going on. So we take the Dave method and we pay $250,000 in cash for that rental property. So we have no principal and no interest. Yeah, we still have taxes and insurance. Same property, same rent, $1,800 a month. I'm going to use some real numbers based on Texas. Many of you in other states, God bless you, you got lower property taxes and lower insurance. Yeah, it's nice, but that's not the case here, unfortunately. So actually, this example, you're going to see if you pay cash, it's going to make the depreciation even worse. All right, so we're using real numbers, and we're spending about $8,000 a year for the property taxes and the insurance on this property. That's going to put our cash flow, it's an $1,800 rent, to around $1,200 a month. What does that equate in rental income? Well, if I'm making $1,200 a month free and clear on my rental property, that's about $14,000 a year on an annual basis, correct? Follow me. Now, it's the same house, it's the same rental property as the first example. What's the depreciation? The depreciation, you get to divide 225 by 27 and a half. That's $8,000 a year. Okay, we're using the Dave Ramsey example. Depreciation's still $8,000. Depreciation doesn't change regardless of how you own that property with or without leverage. It is what it is. So in the Dave Ramsey example, I go to pay my taxes and I go to the IRS and the IRS says, well, Mike, you're a fantastic business owner. After depreciation, you still earn $6,000 in rental income. And by the way, you owe me a piece of that because I always get mine. I'm the IRS. Thank you and have a lovely day. So now, in light of those two examples, do you understand why we put leverage on the property? I don't like paying taxes, okay? I'd rather have five properties that pay me $400 a month than one property that pays me $2,000 a month because of the depreciation, because I don't want to pay taxes. And as far as the mortgage goes, for those of you that are debt averse, let me tell you what, you're not paying for the mortgage. Your renter is paying for the mortgage, the resident of your property. They're paying for your mortgage each and every month when they pay the rent. You've got to get over this debt adversity that you have. You've got to get over it and understand the true value of investment debt. Tax strategy number two. I think everybody's probably aware of this, but let's go into it. Deductible expenses. You can deduct ordinary and necessary expenses related to the property, including mortgage interest. Remember, we have a loan on this. Property taxes, insurance, repairs, maintenance, property management fees. You don't want to manage the property yourself? Hire somebody to do it. By the way, deduct those expenses. Utilities. If there's a time period where in between residents, you've got a turnaround, a four-week turnaround, and you've got to put the utilities in your name. If you're paying those utilities, that's a business expense. Oh, you're in a neighborhood that has an HOA due? That's a business expense. Everything is a business expense. If you buy a $6 bag of mulch to put on that property, that's a business expense. If you put gas in a lawnmower and you mow the property yourself, business expense. By the way, maybe charge yourself $20 to mow the property if you're somebody that does it yourself. Business expense. This is a business. We need to track every penny that we spend maintaining this business. And every single rental property I have is a separate entity, and I have an expense page for each one of those. When I had 11 properties at one time, 11 houses, my business expenses on these properties with mortgage interest and everything else was hundreds of thousands of dollars in business expense. Okay. It was all associated cost, but every penny, every single penny we spend is a deductible expense. Now let's drive this in light versus your personal property. Let's talk about SALT taxes, right? State and local taxes for a second. Those apply to personal homes because of SALT taxes. There's only so much we can claim on our personal home. We're capped. But on rental properties, whether you have one or 50 or 100 or 1,000, you can write off all of the mortgage interest, all of the property taxes. Why? Because those are business expenses. So that's a deductible expense. You need to track everything and share that with your tax people. Strategy number three, passive loss rules and offsetting income. So let's talk about this for a second. Let's talk about adjusted growth income. If you're AGI, this is how much you earn at a W-2 job or even self-employed or however you earn your money, is under $100,000, you can deduct up to $25,000 of passive losses like depreciation, like the first strategy I mentioned. And if you missed it, go back. Against non-passive income like wages. Okay, so what I'm talking about is you have some rental property and you're doing the depreciation, right? The phantom losses on that property that I mentioned in the first strategy. And you also have a job and you earn, let's say, $50,000 in that job. What the IRS says is, hey, you use some of that depreciation against the income on your property, right? In my first example, we could depreciate the property $8,000 a year against $4,800 a year in income. well, I'm not using up the whole $8,000, right? Do you follow me? There's still about $3,000 left, roughly, in that phantom depreciation that I mentioned. And I got three I didn't use just on that one property. Well, I'm going to take that three and I'm going to use it against my W-2 income. The IRS says you can. So you can deduct these extra phantom income, these losses that you weren't able to use in some of the earlier strategies. So say you had five houses, right? That property, if you've got an additional $3,000 in losses that you're not using and you have five rental properties, that's an additional $15,000 in losses that's stacking up and you're not using it. If you're making less than $100,000 in a W-2 job, you can use it there. Okay, so I know that was pretty rough explaining that, but understand it's an advantage to owning rental property and having a job at the same time. Remember, you have to earn less than $100,000. It phases out as you get up to $150,000 or more. Now, another tax advantage. Let's talk about capital gains, the tax treatment upon the sale of the property. If you own a rental property for more than 1 year, the profits are taxed at long-term capital gains rate, which it just depends on where you fall. It could be zero, it could be 15, it could be 20. All three of those rates are lower than ordinary income taxes, okay? This is a tax strategy where we're talking about capital gains, long-term capital gains. We hold our properties for longer than 1 year purposely. We're not fixers and flippers and holding them for 3 minutes, 3 months, or 6 months, and then selling them. And you watch those shows, and they always show you the one example that makes a ton of money. Understand, that's going to get treated as ordinary income. They're going to pay a huge chunk of that to the IRS. If you're a what we call a long-term hold investor and you hold it for longer than a year, and then when you sell it down the road, it's going to be much more advantageous to you because it's going to, that capital, long-term capital gains rate's at a much lower rate. Now, I've sold several properties, and at the end, I've walked away each time I sold those properties with a six-figure check several times. This is a good news, bad news scenario. On one hand, I just came home with $100,000. On the other hand, this is the United States, and I know Uncle Sam's demanding his share. Now, it depends on my adjusted gross income, whether I'm going to get taxed on that 15 or 20%. But that's counter that example, right? It's a first world problem. Pay your capital gains and move on. There are ways to offset that. I'm not going to necessarily get into that. But it's 15 or 20. It's not 42, okay? When I was in corporate America, there was a couple of years where my bonus was six figures. Again, it was good news, bad news. I had a great year. I was recognized by the company. I was handed a very large bonus check, but that was all W-2 income. Uncle Sam took 42% of that, right? And he looked at me when he did it and he said, thanks and have a lovely day. I told you I hate paying taxes. So, but if you have to pay taxes, what would you rather pay? 20% or 42%? I know what boat I'm in. So it's just another advantage to owning, making your money in real estate. Now, the fifth advantage I want to highlight, the fifth tax advantage, is something called the 1031 exchange. And I was actually explaining this to my brother-in-law last month. He had never even heard of it. So the 1031 exchange, basically, it's a law that's been around for well over 100 years. And it lets you defer paying those capital gains taxes that I just mentioned in the previous example, right? 15 or 20% of the sale, you got 100 grand, you're going to owe either 15 or 20,000 to Uncle Sam. Let's say you don't want to pay that. Well, when you sell the rental property and reinvest the proceeds into another similar property, you can use the 1031 exchange and basically kick the can down the road on those capital gains taxes. They're in there. You're just moving them over to the next property, right? You're kind of deferring it for some date in the future. Now, follow me here. The 1031 exchange, it's named after Section 1031 of the U.S. Internal Revenue Code. But you can defer paying capital gains. They don't go away. You defer them when you sell an investment property if you reinvest into like-kind property, right? You can sell one property and go buy three additional properties. You can sell one property and buy two properties. You can sell one property and buy a more expensive property. But it's real estate to real estate, okay? Understand that. Now, both the sold and the replacement property have to be held for investment or business purposes. You can't do this with your primary resident. And the new property must be of equal or greater value, right? I'm selling one property for $200,000. The next one I want to buy is worth $400,000. There's another rule. You have to identify the replacement property within 45 days of selling the original. It doesn't mean sell your property and then start your property search. It means during that sell time, right? It takes 30, 40 days to sell a property. Go ahead and start identifying. You don't have to officially name that with the third party group that does the 1031 exchange. You can name it, you know, the day after you close if you want. You can go, I'm targeting that one, and that one. You can target more than one. You don't have to buy all of them. Now, the other rule is must close within 180 days. So you got 45 days to basically identify the property, and then you have 180 days to close on that property. So you can identify a few that make sense and work through it as you go and make sure that you're doing that 1031 exchange and rolling into it. If you're part of a real estate investor group there and you get the word out, hey, I'm doing a 1031, I'm looking for a property, there's going to be opportunities that come your way. So keep in mind, there's a third party, they call them a qualified intermediary, a QI. They're holding the sale proceeds, right? This isn't going from your checkbook into your checkbook back out to the property. It's going to this third party. If you touch the money at any time, the exchange becomes invalid. So the benefits of the 1031 is tax deferral, right? Capital gains, depreciation recapture, you're kicking the can down the road. Portfolio growth, right? You're reinvesting the full proceeds and you're getting more rental property, usually in quantity and quality. You have the flexibility to consolidate, diversify, or relocate investments, right? One property's run its course, the returns are down because you've held it long enough, time to get a new property. Now, like I said, they're deferred, not eliminated. They'll be due if the final property is sold without another 1031. What happens is a lot of investors will continue exchanging, right? Exchange, 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 exchange. And then finally, they're 105 years old and God love them. They just pass on at that time. They leave the property to their heirs, which has just a gazillion dollars worth of deferred tax in it. And the heirs will inherit that property at the stepped up basis. What happens then? It eliminates all of the tax. It all goes away. So if you're deferring, 1031 exchange, 1031 exchange, 1031 exchange, 1031 exchange, right? Take two properties and you do that eight times. And next thing you know, you have 30 properties. When you leave this world and you leave that to your heirs, they're not going to have the tax implications. So that's important. And that's what's different with real estate than someone leaving a stock portfolio to their kids or something along those lines where there are tax implications. It's not there in real estate. You inherit real estate at the stepped up basis. So it's a fantastic tool for building wealth. It's a fantastic tool to optimize your real estate portfolio. We have vendors that can help you do that. Here at Lifestyles Unlimited, the 1031 exchange is something that many of us have done. It's something that many of us are familiar with. I've even seen it done on a multifamily property that I participated in, which is really complicated and it'd take a show for another day. But in the meantime, I always remembered, it's not the money, it's the lifestyle. See you next week.
Thank you for listening to Lifestyles Unlimited's Real Estate Investor Radio Show. Ready for more of the map? Visit lifestylesunlimited.com. Explore our videos and articles. Click on the radio tab to access past show podcasts. View the radio show schedule and listen to our best of radio shows. Want to continue the conversation? Follow Lifestyles Unlimited on Facebook today. We want to meet you as well. Sign up for a free workshop at lifestylesunlimited.com. LifestylesUnlimited.com. Until next time, remember, it's not the money, it's the lifestyle.
The information and opinions you hear on the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show are those of the hosts, guests, and callers and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of this station, its affiliates, its management, or advertisers. The Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show is for entertainment purposes only. Please consult a professional regarding your personal investment needs. Nothing presented on the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show constitutes an endorsement, recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or security.